Hi everyone, I'm Nicole and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam people. Today's episode contains a content warning. This episode contains potentially triggering content regarding addiction and substance abuse. So on today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about some guests from the student recovery community. So I have... Hi,
Mahesh,
and I have
Bella.
Hi, Bella. How are you both today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm alive, which is, you know, exams. You lose all track of time, and it's that time of year for anyone listening who isn't a student. But today is last day of classes, and it's beautiful and sunny, and papers have to be written.
The mess just starting.
Yeah, and it's just going to be 2 weeks of not fun times. So both Bella and Mahesh are part of the student recovery community, and would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. It's pretty much a safe space for students to talk about any substance abuse or any addictive behaviors. Mm-hmm. There's really no community, and there was no community at UBC before, other than like close by AA groups and stuff like that, but this is not what the SRC does. Mm-hmm. This is more of a, as I said before, like a safe space. You know, we facilitate the space for people to come and talk. We have meetings, such as all recovery meetings, disorder eating meetings, marijuana recovery meetings. And yeah, it's based on harm reduction, which basically means we will never oppose sobriety or nothing like that to anyone. It's pretty much meeting whoever is coming where they are and then, you know, finding a goal together and then just like, you know, using our experiences to find like a possible solution, you know. It's led by students for students. So yeah, we're peeps with lived experiences.
If you feel comfortable sharing, would you like to talk about how you got involved in the SRC?
Sure, yeah. I'm 2 years sober.
Woo.
And yeah, just last confetti. Week
last week, as of last week.
Yeah,
oh my gosh, congratulations,
appreciate it. Yeah, and yeah, I came to UBC. I had like my rock bottom when like during COVID. So school started again. I came here and I didn't really know where to look for a community. I did go to AA meetings because that's how I got sober. But you know, it's just, with all the respect, but it's just like old people. Because that's the idea that we have with sobriety, you know.
Like, yeah, it's definitely, I feel like there are very different like ideas of what an addict looks like, and I feel like not a lot of people realize that it is a very prevalent issue within universities, because I feel like everyone's like, oh, it's college, you're experimenting, you know, it's your time to be wild, but the truth is you're just as susceptible to becoming an addict, if not more, during this time in your life. So I agree that like the community-based programs like NA, AA are helpful, but once again, it's a little different when you are a student and you're kind of constantly surrounded by this environment of, like, normalizing substance use.
Yeah, and just as you said, you know, addiction and substance use, it's something that it's progressive, and we often see it just, like, the end situation, which is, like, in a really, like, bad situation. But in reality, it's just, like, progressive, you know, and it starts at some point. So yeah, I found the community. It's not really that old. It's like 5 or 7 years old. So yeah, I like...
Well, that's very young.
Yeah, and I literally just looked on Instagram, like, you know, recovery communities or something. And I found the SRC and I reached out and you know, I fell in love with the community. People who understood me and, you know, no judgment.
Yeah, it's a very, like, once again, I think it's just really important to have spaces specifically for students, just because the lifestyle is very different from someone who, like, has a full-time job and a family and whatnot. And, like, once again, it's also hard because college is also that time of your life where you go party and you, like, hang out with people, and that is hard to do if you're trying to be sober, I feel, or at least from what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what kind of support does the SRC offer?
Yeah, we offer some meetings. You want to
Yeah, we offer weekly meetings, mm-hmm. 5 times a week, I believe.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot.
Yeah, yeah, and on Wednesdays, I believe there are 2 meetings. Mm-hmm. So there's the all recovery meeting, and then there's the women and gender diverse meeting.
Okay.
So yeah, a lot of different options for people, depending on the support they need. And we also host community events. We have community gatherings. We just had one mm-hmm. Last week on April 6th. And it's just a nice space. It's a nice
Yeah. How many community. Members do you think the SRC has, approximately? Or just, like, people that are that frequent the SRC?
I would say, like, around... I might get the name, the number wrong, but it would be like 70 active members or something.
That's pretty big.
Because the thing is, you know, we have the meetings and everything. When we try to make them as inclusive as possible mm-hmm. in terms of, like, they are called all recovery meetings because we know that there's just a lot of things that we can mm-hmm. Have a struggle with. So, yeah, it's most of the time it's like on and off. So we are always hosting the meetings, but people come a week and then they don't come and stuff because we are students and, you know, there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important to have like a diverse array of events because not everyone can make the community gatherings. Not everyone can make the meetings. We also have more activity based events as well. Like we recently started a crochet corner. Aww. Yeah. It's people who are struggling with addiction. It's really important to, you know, find something to do with your hands. And personally, I found crocheting has been extremely helpful for me. We also have body positive dance sessions as well as trauma-informed yoga. So just a lot of different activities that you can participate in.
Can you talk a little bit more about the events that you host? Are they just like social gatherings?
The community gatherings are essentially social gatherings.
So like hang out,
potluck. We basically just, like, announce it, and it's open to any member at the SRC or, like, newcomers. And what we do is we eat, then there's often, like, activities such as, like, trivias and stuff like that.
That's fun.
And it involves people from the community. Like, members of the community will get to make the trivia and stuff like that. We often watch, like, very bad movies.
Oh, yeah.
Very bad? What do we consider bad? This might get controversial.
There was this movie about this dog.
Oh, my God. It's called Love on a Leash.
I don't like that already.
It is the most horrifically bad movie I've ever seen. So bad to the point that it's good.
Yeah.
I've heard of that concept before.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube. That should say
enough.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
That's how you know it's, it's not. Yeah.
But, you know, it was just community bonding time.
I think that with like any recovery, community is important, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, but sobriety, well, addiction is in itself isolating. There's a lot of shame there, and you don't feel like you have like a right to have a community or to have people in your corner. And then sobriety is I don't know if it's harder, but it's also difficult.
You know, we honor each one individual's journey. So one thing that I forgot to say before is that we don't ask for anyone to identify themselves as an addict or anything like that, because as I mentioned before, we're like harm reduction based. So there's people who only want to, like, you know, reduce the amount of booze they consume or just like only smoke on the weekends, you know. So it's hard to put like a box or a name on to all this stuff.
I think that, I mean, we'll get into that philosophy too later, but I think that was a very interesting one. Do you know if AA and NA structure it like that, like harm reduction, or is it just like pretty strictly sobriety?
It's pretty strictly sobriety,
Interesting.
You know, 90 days, 90 meetings, you're supposed to like stay sort of sober.
Are you supposed to go to a meeting every day?
For the first 90, yes.
Oh my goodness.
You know, it's shaped at a very like specific way, and I don't want to say anything wrong to any specific community, because AA was the process I used to get sober, right? But it's like, it's definitely a hard approach.
It's very strict. There's like a whole rule book, and
the big book.
It doesn't work for everybody or every lifestyle.
AA is an interesting, I don't know too much about like all their rules, mm-hmm. but I do know their pretty famous prayer.
Yeah, the Serenity Prayer.
Oh, yeah.
I do say it every day because, like, again, that's how I got sober, and I am a spiritual person. So, yeah, it was very good to be able to find a rule book that would, like, mm-hmm. teach me how to, you know, humble myself. And
do you feel like you still agree or practice everything that you learned in AA, like every single thing, or do you feel like you've kind of picked and chosen?
I do practice, but, like, not on a daily basis. Like, mm-hmm. you're supposed to follow the steps, like,
every day.
Yeah, and some sort of, like, program every day. But what I do is just, like, I practice the values that he taught me, you mm-hmm. know? You know, the community values, the letting go, and in my case, letting God values and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Because, like, it was hard to realize that my life was unmanageable. So mm-hmm. being able to, like, express that and, yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. So I know that you have all meetings. Sorry, what was the word you used for it?
All recovery
meetings. And then you also have female and queer, was it?
Yeah, women and gender diverse.
Women and gender meetings. Diverse, thank you. Meetings. I know that it's, like, pretty broad just because it would be really difficult to get so specific mm-hmm. on a lot of the issues. But kind of, like, what are some things that the SRC aims to tackle? I know you talked a little bit about substance abuse, addictive behaviors in general. I heard a little bit about eating disorder support. Is yeah. that one of them as well?
Oh, yeah. We do have a disordered eating meeting as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's very intentionally named disordered eating rather than eating disorder.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because you don't need to have an official diagnosis in order to join the meeting. You can just be curious to explore your relationship with food mm-hmm. or body image. And a lot of people, that's the thing about the SRC as well. We don't have, like, a standardized mm-hmm. set of values that we impose mm-hmm. on someone and tell them, hey, this is our philosophy, get behind it. It's more like the peer leaders, they work with the individual yeah. student to establish a recovery pathway that works for them mm-hmm. and that works with their life and what they're going through and where they are in their recovery journey currently.
Do you feel like that's more work than having, like, a strict set of rules?
It can be more work. I think it's actually more work on the part of the student because it requires them to do a lot more reflection on what they want.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And what they want their relationship to substances or drugs or other process addictions to look like.
I really appreciate the disordered eating, the linguistic value of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have a pretty close friend who has been diagnosed with an eating disorder, but mm-hmm. prior to being diagnosed, they always really struggled with food and mm-hmm. their relationship with their body and their eating habits, but they didn't feel comfortable to do anything about it because they were like, I don't have a diagnosis. And I think that especially kind of in this culture, it's really difficult to try and engage in self-improvement unless someone explicitly tells you there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just so hard to admit that, hey, like, I want to better myself even though there's nothing technically wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate that there is a very specific emphasis on disordered eating.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an important clarification. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate just generally how there's like an all recovery group
mm-hmm.
because I feel like kind of at the very core, a lot of these issues come like boil down to the same issues, which is.
Yeah, the thing is, often they all come together.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I was getting sober,
mm-hmm.
I started to smoke a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just. It's harm reduction based, so
yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, we change ones from another ones, you know. Like, I at some point reassessed my relationship with sports when I got sober because mm-hmm. like I just didn't want it to become something that I would be dependent on and stuff like that, you know. But then I realized that it's like it's just quite better than what I was using or doing.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's really interesting that my friend is studying dietetics.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, for some people who previously were considered to be alcoholics. Sometimes they develop binge eating disorders, and sometimes clinics consider that a win because it is, like, technically better for you than their previous issue, but then you have to go reevaluate that later mm-hmm. on if that becomes a problem.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting how it's kind of an ever-evolving process, and it's never, mm-hmm. okay, you did your 90 days, you did your 90 meetings, you're yeah. out, you're cured. It's an ongoing process.
Yeah, no, it's progress, not perfection, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you ever, or either of you ever get tired with this idea that it's, like, a constant reevaluation?
Yeah. Well, honestly, judging by the place that I was mm-hmm. 2 years ago, I so much prefer just constantly being reevaluating myself rather than being where I was.
Yeah, fair enough.
And, you know, my case was, like, straight on addiction. So, yeah, the addictive mind just, like, tells me that, you know, maybe you're fine already, or maybe you yeah. reached the end goal. But, like, that's just...
There is no end goal. You're just constantly trying to get a little yeah, bit better.
And mm. you know, you do get better. And this ideology about one day at a time does work for me, you know?
Awesome.
Yeah. But the topic of, like, constant reevaluation, when I first realized that that was essentially what I was doing, it kind of made me a little... not sad, but it made me a little, like, disheartened.
Yeah.
Because I realized that it's a lot of work. And yeah. I kept on trading one addiction for another.
Yeah.
And that's where the constant reevaluation comes in. Because yeah. it's like, you think you've tackled one issue, but actually another issue has kind of risen to replace that. Mm-hmm. And then you have to work on that issue. And then, yeah. you know, it just keeps on going on and on. Yeah. And it can be really exhausting.
Yeah.
And you know, yes. Sorry. Yeah. Like, most of the time, the addictive behavior is not the problem necessarily.
No, no, it's like, a symptom.
It's the solution, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, like, my substance use, my addictive behavior is my, you know, addictive traits, they were not my problem. They were my solution.
I feel like I've been, and this is not me being like, you're wrong. This yeah. is me bringing up something different I've heard. But I feel like what I've heard is that substance abuse and addictive behaviors are a symptom of something, or a coping mechanism.
Oh, yeah.
Of no, something yes. lower. Not I redact my previous statement. redacted, brackets. Not necessarily a symptom, but a coping mechanism for something that's mm-hmm. underlying.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like either of you have kind of tried to dive a little deeper into figuring out what those underlying issues are?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, the use of the substance mm-hmm. was the solution
yeah.
to my underlying
situation. A temporary one, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, not like, a reliable one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was, I did not like myself, like, when I was sober
yeah.
or not using drugs or anything like that. But when I was using them,
mm-hmm.
I end up not liking myself either.
Yeah.
So I would not like myself in either of, or, you know.
Yeah.
So I had my rock bottom, and I realized that, you know, I need to reassess and learn how to love myself and value myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read this thing once that said all addictions arise from the attempt to self-remedy or mm-hmm. self-medicate. And I think that's where the sentiment of the substance abuse being the solution comes from. Because, mm-hmm. or to me, I was using drugs basically to try to solve my emotional problems or trying to manipulate my emotional state
mm-hmm.
So that I wouldn't feel what I was feeling anymore. But that doesn't do anything. All that does is just bury the pain
mm-hmm.
and cover it up.
It comes
but it's
back
still
up.
There. Yeah. It still resurfaces. But then because you're always constantly numbing the pain and trying to repress it, every time it surfaces, it becomes more and more unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the fact that addiction just makes everything worse and worse, that's where that comes from. Because you're not actually solving the issue, the underlying issue. You're just kind of pushing it away, mm-hmm. sweeping it under the rug to deal with another day.
Yeah.
But, you know, that day will always come eventually, and that's when I hit rock bottom, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. That was a very intense first 20 minutes. Thank you so much for sharing those very personal parts, though. We're going to head to ad break right now, but when we return, we're going to talk a little bit more about the student recovery community's philosophy. I keep saying center. I don't know why. Community's philosophy.
Yeah.
Students of UBC, join us. Join the SSN, a collaboration between the C4 Choral Composition Club and the Music Production Club. With us, you can find someone with whom to collaborate, someone with whom to make music. All skill levels welcome. SSN@gmail.com. Reach out. Together, we can make music. Join us.
Are you looking for ways to be a part of the community through low-stakes opportunities like volunteering? What about making friends that are really cool or have some common interests? Well, I'm here to tell you that at CITR, you can come volunteer at Volunteer Wednesdays, happening every other Wednesday from 12 to 3 with a really fun activity each time, like making signs or button making. Not only is it a great break from outside stress, but a great opportunity to be a part of the community. For more information, you can visit CITR's Instagram page at CITR and Discorder.
Radio is also nice.
Radio is pretty awesome. So welcome back. This is Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. This episode contains a trigger warning, so there might be some potentially triggering content regarding addiction and substance abuse. So hey again, Mahesh and Bella.
Hey.
Hi.
We're back. So the philosophy behind the SRC, the student recovery community, we touched on very briefly in the first part, but I thought it was really interesting that you folks focus on harm reduction rather than just straight up sobriety.
Yeah.
Because like we touched on, AA, NA are very like hard sobriety focus, whereas you guys focus a little bit more on harm reduction. And can you kind of explain the reasoning behind why you choose to be a harm reduction based program?
Sure, yeah. Well, quick thing, I'm not like saying this pathway works better than these other pathways. Mm-hmm. You know, we understand that there's a lot of different pathways for recovery, and you know, a lot of them work. So like there's people that have like went through just reducing their drinking and that has worked for them, you know. But yeah, we focus on harm reduction because as a university setting, you know, we're also students and we are like we have a lot of pressures on top. And if it was just like sobriety based, the community won't be as inclusive, which means that, you know, we won't be able to like reach as many folks as possible, which is what we're trying to do. Because mm-hmm. Again, there's no communities like this in universities. Actually, we were the first one in Canada, you know.
Yeah, I learned
really.
Today, yeah. I learned today that the SRC at UBC was the first of its kind in Canada, and at the time of its founding,
which was very recently,
and at the time of its founding, there was only one other one in the U.S.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's you know, we're definitely like it's something that really helps and it's working because like the community is growing, you know, and we are starting to get more and more interest in us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know if you've seen the coffee cart. It says like
I have
people who use drugs study
here. I saw it today.
Yeah. It's a hard statement because like
Sorry, could you repeat it again?
Oh, yeah. So it has like a little sticker that says people who use drugs live here. People who use drugs like study, teach here, whatever. Because it's a hard statement because like UBC or, you know, we never think that UBC is a place of that can have addiction and can have, you know, this type of situations. We think that it's just something that happens on like downtown east side, you know?
Yeah, there definitely is like a massive stigma about substance use. And because UBC is considered a school of quote unquote prestige, I feel like a lot of people tend to just like gloss over that.
Like we study the drugs, but we do not use them, you know? That's one of the ideas that has happened.
Yeah.
But yeah. Going back to the harm reduction, I'm sorry.
No worries. It was that's an interesting statement. It's a very bold one.
Yeah, and we were laughing the other day because, like, you know, we have this people going to see the university, this, like, students.
It's part of the deal.
And then they see the card saying with their parents, like, you know, people who use drugs leave here. And we just see the faces looking at the cards. But it's the truth, you know. And the more we talk about it, the less the stigma. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree. That is a little funny, just like touring students. They're like, oh my God. And it's like, it's everywhere you go.
Yeah.
We just don't talk about it as much in certain spaces over others.
Yeah.
So harm reduction over eliminating behaviors or sobriety. Sobriety is still an option.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I did white knuckle my sobriety, which means that I didn't get like help from communities or anything like that. And it was quite a painful process. So harm reduction, it's also, you know, whatever makes you feel better at the moment, you know, because sometimes cutting 100% the substance might also be like
dangerous
or worse for what you're living right now, you
is
know we're
AA
students
not considered to be a community. Is that just a program?
It is a community.
Okay.
But like, you know, emphasis on the anonymous part of it.
Yeah, for, you know? Sure. Oh yes, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, like, we are students, we are away from home, we are dealing with the stress of school, we are dealing with the social pressure, we are dealing with the toxic idea of that university is a party time, and it's the part, that, like, the time of the life that you have to, you know, just exceed your limits, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I see that. For many people, sometimes sobriety is not the most reasonable option, especially like it's so hard as a student. You're balancing so many responsibilities and so many expectations. And like, once again, going cold turkey, white knuckling it is sometimes not really an option. It's not necessarily safe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think harm reduction is a very interesting solution to that. And I genuinely do think it's crazy that this is the only program in Canada. Or it was.
Yeah.
It's not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah. And we
because
recently,
the philosophy makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And we recently got training, like some students got training from the, like by hand with the CMHA, which is a Canadian Mental Health Association.
Yeah, I've done some work with them. They're great.
Yeah, they're great. So we got some training
by
hand with them to become like peer leaders. So essentially now we have people with lived experiences who also are training like active listening and which are the people who like facilitate the meetings and stuff like that. So it's like a quite structured program community, you know?
I have a quick question. Is the student recovery community like a club with an AMS?
No.
Is it at all affiliated with UBC?
It is. So we recently got under the umbrella of the Wellness Center.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, we're not really connected in like work or anything like that, but we are under them.
Yeah.
Which means that, you know, we get some resources, they can use us as resources.
Okay, awesome. Do you receive funding, if I'm allowed to ask that?
So we do have two program coordinators.
Okay.
They know more about this topic, so I really wouldn't like to like talk and say something wrong, you know.
But yeah, that's it's awesome that you folks are affiliated with UBC and do get something, some support.
Yeah, it's it's been a like a, I want to say battle, because again, it's, you know, we often have the situation where really like UBC does not accept that there's like addiction happening at the university. We are the ones who study addiction, not the ones who struggle with
addiction. That's such an interesting statement, I feel.
Yeah.
It is a powerful one, though.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I want to say like a funny thing, but I might not say it anymore because I don't know if it's wrong or right. But like, we recently got posted at the UBC, University of BC, like, Instagram.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And, you know, we've been...
Oh, yeah, we were talking about this the other day.
Yeah, we've been on for quite some time. And it's, as you were mentioning, like, such a great resource. But we, like, after all these years, right now, we just got...
We just got a shout-out.
Yeah.
But it's fine, you know.
It's the... It's part of society's...
Absolutely.
...larger habit of just relegating addiction to, like... spaces that they can't see.
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely a phenomenon of if you don't understand it or if you consider it bad, you just try to push it out of your way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I recently did an episode about medical assistance in dying and how MAID has, that's the acronym, MAID has kind of highlighted a lot of these issues within disability rights in Canada. And the person I was interviewing was like, these things have always existed. We people just push it away because they don't want to talk about it. Because it makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's a very similar issue within substance abuse.
Yeah, and it's so stigmatized. Mm-hmm. Like, the idea of addiction or people who use drugs. It's even, like you mentioned, the downtown east side. Mm-hmm. Like, they're recently, they're, the city over the long weekend, actually, they tore down tent establishments on Hastings Street. Ooh. So just displacing an entire population of homeless people. And not that homelessness and, you know, drug addiction completely overlap, because they don't. There is overlap, but there's not a complete overlap. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, it's just so stigmatized. It's so, there's this idea like, oh, if you can't see it or if it doesn't affect you, then you don't have to deal with it. You know, it doesn't bother you, it's not part of your life, but it's like, addiction is, in my opinion, a commentary on like our larger society and how our society is functioning as a whole, because you can't ignore people who are suffering even just because they're out of your sight and in places that you can't see or that you can't access, which is why I think the idea of addiction at universities is also a little like, ugh, is a little icky to some people, because they're like, addiction doesn't belong here. They have an image of what an addict is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not a student who studies at UBC, a prestigious school.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true. Addiction can permeate every single social class, every culture, every community, every age.
Yeah. It's very much so not a class issue. It's a human issue.
It's a human issue.
Yeah.
It's a societal issue.
Yeah.
And you can't just ignore it just because you don't like it or you don't want to be associated with it.
Yeah. And all this, like, ideas that we have around addiction just build up more shame around the people who's, like, struggling with it or struggling with any type of addictive behavior.
Do you feel like addictive behaviors... Or do you feel like what is okay, here's my question. I formulated this in my head. I thought I said some words and then I was like, no, I'm gonna think it. Do you feel it is the underlying issues that kind of cause addictive behaviors, or the actual addictive behaviors that create shame? Or is it both?
Both.
Both. Yeah. Yeah, we have a situation that we need to cope with. We use something to cope with it that it's not entirely socially accepted.
Yeah.
Then we just enter this like loophole of feeling shamed.
Yeah.
Then to prevent feeling ashamed, you use again, or like to cope with the shame, you use again, you know, or you repeat whatever you're doing, you know.
We touched on a little bit earlier about why community is important for addiction. It is once again a very lonely, shameful, guilty experience. But how would you say that community helps in recovery?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about my experience. Actually, when I got to the SRC and I saw and I heard students telling me their stories, like around my age, going through similar stuff, I was like, you're just saying what I'm going through, you know? And I just couldn't believe it. And, you know, the fact that there was people going through the like the same things that I was going through just like gave me the strength and the, you know, sense of belonging to something. So we will like rely on each other. Hearing people's experiences is like hearing what people did to like get better. Mm-hmm. It was just like some sort of, I don't want to say advice, because like no one ever tells you that, what to do in the SRC.
Inspiration.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I might try that. You know, I might see if that works, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Addiction is a very isolating experience. And also psychological isolation is what leads to addiction in the first place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, I found that, or when I discovered a community of other people who are struggling with the same things that I was struggling with, it kind of gave me hope, because in my mind I was like, they managed to pull themselves out of their situations, or at least they're, or for some people they're currently trying to, or they're experimenting, or they're exploring their relationship with substances and drugs and other types of addictive behaviors. And I got a lot of ideas from them.
Yeah.
Because at the time, I just didn't know how to manage. And I also didn't really know if I needed to manage in the first place. Yeah.
You know? I feel like validating yourself that you might have a problem is possibly the most important step.
Yeah.
It was just denial is, once again, one hell of a drug.
Yeah.
It was really important for me to see and listen to other people who are in the same boat, because for me, when I was alone, that loneliness kind of reinforced my addiction. Like, that was when my addiction was at its worst.
Yeah.
But being in a community also serves as, you know, community also serves as a force of accountability as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
accountability to yourself, to the fact that you want a better life and you want a better future for yourself.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when you're alone, you don't think about those things, because you don't have that social interaction.
Yeah, and, you know, it sounds like it's, like, a stressful or, like, a hard place to be on. But, like, we tried to make the SRC a very happy and, you know,
nice
environment, you know. Like, we have the meetings, but we also have drop-in hours, and we also have, like, just, like, random times. Because, like, everyone in the community has access to the room. So people can just, like, drop in and just talk about anything.
Yeah, you can just go and hang out.
I feel like that just makes recovery so much more accessible.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like, I feel like the vibe of AA has always been very intense, and it's like daunting to go try a meeting. But the fact that the SRC, and it's not toxic positivity for anybody who's accusing, not toxic positivity, but it's just more of like a general, more accessible, like, this is a place of, like, hope and, like, inspiration, and not a place of, like, sadness.
Well, that's the thing. We all ended up at the SRC because we are dealing with something, you know? Yeah. We like to say that the only membership for the SRC is, like, to have a willingness to do something different or to change, to have the want. So it's like, you know, we all got there because we want to do something different, you know? Might as well just make it something happy and a nice environment.
Yeah. Another thing that I thought of, like, just now, the fact that you can, you know, go to the space and just essentially just, like, hang out, talk to people about literally anything.
That's a really wonderful thing to have.
It is a really wonderful thing to have, because it also doesn't make your entire life around recovery as well. And personally for me, earlier in the semester, I found myself doing that. Like, I found myself just revolving my entire life around recovery. And that's, and too much of anything is not good.
Oh, for sure. Moderation.
Too much of anything is not good. And also, like, yes, recovery permeates, like, every aspect of my life and every sphere. But I also don't want to be constantly confronting it and constantly talking about it all the time with everyone.
Yeah.
So just the fact that you can go to the lounge and you can talk about whatever, you can play chess, you can, I don't know, read a book, you can watch a movie, you can crochet, you can do your homework, you can study. Like, it's just, it's like your entire, it doesn't just focus on one sphere of your life, you know? You can make it touch every part of your life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that was a really beautiful way to word it. I appreciated that. We're gonna go to ad break. at a break right now. But when we return, we're going to talk a little bit more about how the SRC operates and the peer leaders in the community.
Sure,
so
yeah.
We will return.
Where do you go to cry? Where do you go to scream? Where do you go to sing at the top of your lungs and play instruments and be free? You can join UBC Cry Club. UBC Cry Club provides instruments and a judgment-free zone for people to let loose and be free using music as therapy. UBC Cry Club meets at 8 p.m. on Wednesdays at the Fraser River Parkade. For more information, go to M01E on Instagram.
Happy Fun Time Music, Fridays at 12 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
And unfortunately, we're all human. Except me, of course.
Hi, welcome back. This is Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. So this episode has a content warning. It contains potentially triggering content regarding addiction and substance abuse. So the SRC, we talked a little bit about this already, but you have 5 meetings a week, and on Wednesdays there are 2 meetings. And we talked a little bit about the topics that are tackled. There are all recovery meetings and female and gender queer specific meetings, and then there are disordered eating meetings. So lots of different options. Do you provide options for resources outside of the SRC?
Yeah, okay, so I like to see it as the SRC is like a middle path for students to go to like any other resources like Smart Recovery or AA. So we offer like, you know, just general information to where you can go and where you can access other resources. We have like connection, like we can connect people to like counseling services, you know, some like anything specific that students need, we can, you know, look around and help them find them.
Do you provide the resources? You just give them the name of the resource and then they go contact?
So, yeah, no, honestly, we can do that, and we can also like
liaison?
Yeah, like,
oh, wow, that's
like walk with wonderful. Them and, well, you know, it depends like the situation. Like, yeah. Again, we see every single situation as very like individual. So, yeah, like, if someone comes to me and says that, you know, I'm not ready to go by myself, I will walk with them. And, you know, however we can help, we will try to help, you know. So, that's how we connect people outside.
The student recovery community is led by students.
Yes.
So peer leaders. Are you both peer leaders?
I am not a peer leader.
I am a peer leader,
cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting me know. How did you become a peer leader?
So we went through like an intensive program. This is what I was talking about with the CMHA.
And it's, is that like, now mandatory if you want to become a peer leader?
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, what we learned is how to use our experiences in order to be able to like better listen and better give, share our experiences. Because like as a peer leader, we do not give advice. We're not counselors, you know. We're not prepared to like let someone, like tell someone what to do. But we are, like, we learn how to listen, how to actively listen, how to share our experiences in the right time and the right type part of our experiences that will help that, you know, guide, probably, something like that. But, yeah, we're not, like, counselors or anything like that. So we went through this program, and, yeah, it's, like, a 5-week program.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we need to learn. Because, like...
Do you have, like, a test at the end?
Okay. No, thankfully, you know? But we, like, we want to be make sure that we understand and we can catch when something is actually out of our hands, you know? Because, like...
Yeah, that's important.
We are, like, a resource that students use, but there's also, like, a lot more outside, like, prepared people for actually giving...
Who get paid.
Like, and specific help, you know? Yeah. Like, you know, I'm not ready to deal with someone that's dealing with, like, suicide or something like that. Because, like, I'm not an expert, and I have my experience that I can share, but I wouldn't be comfortable even, you know. And we have our own community that we help, like peer leaders, we help each other. Because after sessions...
Yeah, debrief sessions.
Yes. Yeah. And just, like, to talk about, like, how I'm feeling and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it must be a difficult job to take on. Just, one, there's the time commitment. I don't know how many meetings you would run a week, but, like, you've got school.
Yeah, well, I'm passionate. Well, in my case, I'm passionate about recovery because, like, it saved my life. So time commitment was, like, I was already doing it last year, so, like, might as well.
Yeah, but the emotional toll it takes is also something you have to consider.
Yeah, it's definitely... I feel like that's why the training is, like, extensive.
Yeah.
Because, like, we... Most of the time, we were learning how to balance our own emotions and our own situations to be able to support, you know?
Yeah.
To be in the right place to support. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very intense for a student to take on, I feel. It must be rewarding, though.
Well, you know, honestly, after dealing with, like, the worst parts of addiction, it's not really that intense. Because, like, you know... It's just, like, if I can make people not go through what I went,
yeah.
I'm, you know, it's that's just enough reward for me. Because, like, you know, the only thing I have is my experience, so I might as well use it for something good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I personally am vehemently against the idea that you have to turn every negative experience into a positive one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are definitely some cases where it's, like, you kind of need this to be a beacon of hope.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I really hate that people, the, like, Instagram posts that are, like, oh, people with anxiety are, like, better at this. I'm, like, some things can just be bad. And we can leave it at that.
Yeah.
On or sadness.
Yeah, but I appreciate that, especially, like, with a community that's so important to be able to take your experiences and be, like, hey, this was hell on earth for me, but... I hope it informs you and helps you in your journey.
Yeah. And, of course, like, we are more than, like, or us peer leaders, we are allowed to say, you know, today I just don't feel like I can, because we're also students and, you know. And we also get the help that we need. As I was saying before, we have our two, like, coordinators, and they also, like, are always trying to help us and trying to, you know, make sure that we're in the position that we can. Yeah. Just, like, support others.
How many peer leaders do you think there are for the SRC right now?
I don't have the number. I think we're 5 or 6 peer leaders plus the two coordinators. So, yeah.
Okay, so it's, like, an all-hands-on-deck situation.
Yeah, sort
of. How many coordinators do you think there are per meeting? Or, sorry, leaders do you think there are per meeting?
So, like, each peer leader, there's, like, 3 that lead meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the coordinators, and they also lead meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the coordinators is always in another meeting, just to have two in the same meeting.
Yeah.
Also, some of us lead drop-in hours,
yeah.
which are, like, just, you know, what it is, basically drop-ins. And, yeah.
Awesome. Can you talk a little bit about the structure of what a meeting would look like?
Sure.
I don't know if they differ from like, meeting to meeting.
Disordered
eating versus all recovery.
Yeah, the main difference is that it's led by someone who has experience in that.
Okay.
Because the meeting structure is similar, you know, like, we start by doing, like, saying the meeting agreements, land acknowledgement, meeting agreements, which are basically, you know, we honor confidentiality, we try to not glorify substance use or addictive behaviors, like, all the rules, per se. And then we choose 3 universal topics, you know, that can be finals, stress, and talking to your friends about addiction, you know? And then we just discuss about those topics. And there's always a 4th topic, which is anything else in your mind. So people may choose to just talk about whatever they want. And also, you know, we do not tell anyone to talk. Like, if they don't want to talk, if they don't want to listen, they can do
it. So you just go in a circle and share?
Yeah. And then we close by, you know, saying something that we're grateful for and a goal for the upcoming week and a milestone. That can be like, you know, I finished an assignment, you know?
Yeah.
The small things that we
Is there content that you're not allowed to share in meetings, like potentially triggering things, or is that?
We try not to delve into the specifics. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we try to focus on the emotions around the event rather than the event itself.
So are you allowed to like mention the event in passing, but then focus more on like,
yeah,
I felt, so like this, for example, like XYZ happened, but because of XYZ, like I felt this. And
yeah,
then, like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. You can definitely provide context.
Yeah.
There's like the space to do it if you need to. Mm-hmm. And those are like the one-on-one meetings that you can also like schedule with a peer supporter or a coordinator. But yeah, because that can be that can lead to like glorifying
substances
or glorifying, you know.
It can also be triggering. Like I'm just thinking in the context of the disordered eating meeting rather than mentioning numbers
grams
anything like that, we try to focus more on just the feelings around what happened. Also just like we don't want to trigger anyone and we don't want to delve into the specifics because a lot of the times those specifics are what cause like, you know, the flashbacks and like the resurfacing of memories or just thoughts that you don't want to engage in.
That's why we have a peer leader in the meeting, so it's like we're not like mediating anything, we're just like making sure the meeting runs smoothly. And if we hear that something's going out of hand, we just like make sure like bring back the meeting back to place, you know, like we also like just to keep track of time because like, you know, talking about this stuff can lead to like hours and hours,
yeah, for sure,
but we try to keep it like within the hour because like we're students.
So yeah. Within the SRC it runs year round from what I've heard. And you have meetings. Is there like any other kind of structure that you folks offer, or is it just like we're a community, it's pretty free reign, come as you please, take what you need?
I mean, we have the structure of on the meetings. The dropping hours are also like at structured times. Then the one-on-ones, you can like pretty much schedule those whenever you want. People that are part of the community can come and use the lounge whenever they want, as long as there's no like a drop-in hour, a meeting or something, you know, that they are not going to. Otherwise, they can drop in whenever they want and there's like snacks and stuff. People can use whatever they need.
Do you feel like people who join the SRC kind of get what they need, support, and then leave? Or do you feel like they stay and engage in the community further? Like, what is just the general experience?
So, you know, what I've experienced is people stay. You know,
volunteer, things like
that. People start to get more involved. They want to get more involved, give back to the community. And we don't encourage anything, but it's nice to see that because, like, for newcomers, it's nice to see people that are enjoying the community and that are, like, I've seen progress in the community, you know? But, yeah.
Awesome. It was really lovely to hear about both of your experiences and all the work that you do with the SRC. I think it's a very important, not talked enough about topic, especially in colleges. But is there anything you'd kind of like to end the episode with?
We're still going to be operating over the summer, like offering meetings and stuff like that. I'm not sure how that's going to look like, but I'll just like, you know, people should just like check out the Instagram and, you know, that's where we put the meetings and the stuff that we offer. And yeah, reach out, you know, we have all this help that we offer and people often don't know about it. So if you know anyone who would be interested in using our help, more than welcome to reach out. You know, all the information is on the Instagram, and I can also pull it out right now.
Yeah, it's student underscore.
It's at recovery underscore UBC.
Yes. That is. That.
Thank you. yeah, and that kind of wraps up our episode, unless either of you want to share anything else. Wonderful. That was very lovely. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Good luck to everyone who's finishing up finals. I hope everyone is going to have smooth sailing for that. This is the last episode of All Access Pass for the next foreseeable 2 weeks until I come back, because I like to work. but yeah, I hope to bring you all more content over the summer, and I'll see you all in the school year. Otherwise, just quickly would like to mention that Bella uses a pseudonym just for their own protection and safety, but otherwise, it was great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah.